The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, as I said, we have a very special guest today. We have a very special topic. We might finally get the answer that the whole world is waiting for. Will they or will they not raise interest rates? And if you'd like to call in, remember the number is 844-305-7800. That's 844-305-7800. This is a talk show, so we will be happy to answer your questions. But we're pleased this morning to have Mr. Mark Chandler with us. Mark is with Brown Brothers Harriman. He joined them in 2005. He is the global head of currency strategy. Previously, he was a chief currency strategist for HSBC Bank and the Mellon Bank. So he's got a great, great track record here. So, Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it sounds like I fire my boss every couple of years, whether you deserve it or not, huh?
Yeah. Listen, Warren Buffett said just, I guess about a week or so ago, he said that the Fed is going to have a very difficult time raising rates in September. He said, and I quote, "It may very well happen in September, but I don't think it's an easy decision when rates are considerably lower in Europe and you might be affecting imports and exports." What do you think? Obviously, this is all we seem to have been talking about now for about a year to year and a half, is will they raise rates? When will they raise rates? Keeps kicking the can down the road. Everybody was, you know, half the country was sure they'd raise rates in the spring. They didn't. Then they said, okay, well, maybe September. And now it's like something like, I believe, according to a market view that y'all put out recently, what, 82% of the academic economists expect a rate hike next month? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, you're right. That's the Wall Street Journal poll. They do this poll every month after the non-farm payroll data comes out. And, yeah, for the second month in a row, it's about 82% of business economists and academic economists. But looking at the market pricing, like Fed funds futures and other derivative contracts, the market itself is pricing less of a chance. But this isn't really that unusual. I mean, think about what the Federal Reserve says. They say that there's two ways to measure inflation expectations. One is using market-based measures like break-evens, the spread between the inflation-linked bonds and conventional bonds, for example. And there's also surveys. And the Fed says, look, we're going to be putting more reliance on surveys because market measures might be skewed by various things, including QE itself. And so we find the same divergence in expectation on Fed policy. But I was one of those people you referred to. I thought that the Fed was going to raise rates in June. I thought that the economy is going to be strong enough. The Fed would be closer to its objectives. And, of course, we had that weakness, which has mostly been revised away for Q1. You know, initially it was a contraction. Now it's a slight positive growth. But that was enough to push us further out. I think you're right. The key question is, are they going to do it in September? And I'm in the camp that says yes. But then again, I'm an economist. But I do think that what Warren Buffett said, I think, is important, not because of what he said, but sort of like why. So the Federal Reserve the argument would be that especially now, lower interest rates in Europe. But I think the Federal Reserve has to demonstrate that it is independent of what the IMF says. The IMF says the Fed should wait till 2016.
Right.
They have to show that they're independent of the ECB. They have to show that they're independent of Beijing, given the Chinese stock market sell-off and the currency devaluation. And they have to show that they're independent of Saudi Arabia, that's the drop in oil prices. And they have to show that they're independent of people like us, that is, individual investors who might be adding volatility to the stock market. So I think that the Federal Reserve is very close to its unemployment target. Its measure of full employment, we're at 5.3%. That's the upper end of where the Fed says is a healthy level. Inflation's lagging, but the point here is not to think about what we personally might think the best thing for the Federal Reserve to do is, what the Fed ought to do. Instead, the game is really guessing what the Fed will do. And the Fed's mindset is on this thing called the Phillips curve. And that basically is this mathematical expression to say that the tighter the labor market becomes, that will over time push up inflation. And so Janet Yellen, for example, the chair of the Federal Reserve, says she doesn't have to see wages go up. She doesn't have to see inflation go up to be reasonably confident, and that's her threshold, reasonably confident that inflation will rise over the medium term. It doesn't mean today. It doesn't mean tomorrow. Over the medium term, usually thought to be about 2 years, the Fed will get to its target. And so that's why I think the Fed most likely raises interest rates. Economy's humming along, We're getting close to the Fed's objectives, and the sooner it does it, it can get it out of the way. And I think when the Fed does make this announcement, that it'll also go out of its way to explain that this is an unusual tightening cycle. It will be more gradual than past cycles, and the peak of the Fed funds rate in this cycle will be much lower than in past cycles.
Now, I really like what you have to say. You're the very first person that I have ever heard say the Fed needs to become independent of all those entities such as China, Saudi Arabia, and IMF. And I really think that's a great idea. But are they not concerned? And it's really silly. It seems like we boxed ourselves into a corner. In other words, obviously the stock market has been a tremendous recipient of both Fed policy, both from lower interest rates, but also from the quantitative easing that the Fed embarked on over a several-year period of time. So obviously, you know, most people would argue, rightly or wrongly, that stocks are higher than they would normally be because of Fed policy. Haven't they kind of boxed themselves in the corner? Because it seems like the market has been following the Fed and cheap money, and that when they raise interest rates, which I personally believe they should do, so I'm like you, I'm kind of in your camp. Whether or not they do it in September or not, I think they need to get started, because if we get deflation, they'll have no bullets in the gun to fight deflation. But they seem to have boxed themselves in somewhat of a political corner, because every time people really start thinking about a Fed increase, the market heads south. And are they not afraid of destroying a lot of asset value by raising interest rates?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the key, really, I think you're asking is, what's the relationship between the stock market and the rest of the economy? And I
right.
think even the Federal Reserve, someone like Janet Yellen, has expressed concern that the stock market is valuations elevated. And think
right.
about what we've done this year. It seems to me that the S&P 500, for example, has been in a pretty tight range, say plus or minus 3 or 4% on either side of last year's close. So I think that we've really been going broadly sideways now for 6, 7, 8 months. And so I think that the Federal Reserve is willing to accept, just like they say about the dollar, they say part of the reason the dollar is higher right now is that people expect us to raise interest rates. And I think that's an important thing for your listeners, is that the stock market, the role of the market is not just as an aggregator of information, better than any bureaucrat could do, but it also is an anticipatory mechanism. And
right.
so partly the reason that the stock market hasn't gone anywhere this year is because the market's anticipating the Fed rate hike. And so what concerns me about the dollar, I'm a bull on the dollar in the long run, but I do think that people have bought the dollar in anticipation of the Fed rate hike, and so we're then vulnerable to a certain type of trading strategy of sort of, we start talk about it, buy the rumor, buy the dollar on rumor that the Fed's going to raise interest rates, and sell it on the fact. And so I could see the dollar pulling back after the Fed announces a rate hike, especially if it couches it in couches concern that it's about to begin a very aggressive tightening cycle. And so I could see the same thing in the stock market. What impresses me about the S&P 500 is it's proven pretty resilient around that 200-day moving average. We go below it a little bit intraday. We might even have a couple closes below it, but it comes right back. And I think that part of the trick to this cycle is that even if the Fed does tighten, raise interest rates, that other parts of the world are still easing. We're talking about the ECB, talking about the BOJ, talking about the Central Bank of China. And that easing keeps the global liquidity conditions sufficient that I think will give the stock markets continued support.
Yeah, even I think even, was it Peggy, you said Vietnam this morning?
Vietnam, yes, devalued
their currency this mm-hmm. morning. In fact, when we get back, we're in our last minute, so we're going to go to a break. But I'd like to talk to you about whether or not there's really a currency war. That's something I've been hearing the last couple of days. And I'd like to talk to you about China and the impact that they've had by devaluating their currency. So stay with us, folks. We're having a great show with Mark Chandler. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Straight Talk Money.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got Mark Chandler with us. Mark is with Brown Brothers Harriman. He is the global head of currency strategy. Prior to that, he was chief currency strategist for HSBC Bank and Mellon Bank. He's a very prolific writer and speaker. He's written. I mean, Financial Times, Barron's, Euro Money, Corporate Finance, Foreign Affairs. And Mark and I were just talking over the break. You know, he really represents the institutional side. So, folks, you ought to listen up because you're getting to hear from what the institutions are thinking and saying, not just kind of the popular press, the financial entertainment, as I call it, that we get on CNBC. So, Mark, let's talk a little bit about the currency war, or at least. That's what people are calling it, or alluding to, is that China has created a currency war by the devaluation. It doesn't seem to me like they've done anything other than what everybody else has done.
Yeah, I'd even go one step more than that. Not only have they done what everybody else has done, but they've done it with the blessings of the IMF, and it might seem a surprise, but also the U.S. Treasury. What the U.S. Treasury and the IMF have been asking China to do is that let the markets have greater sway over the currency. And most recently, for the last 6 months, maybe a year, China has been involved in the currency markets, but keeping the currency from depreciating. So when they step away from the market, of course, the RMB, the Chinese currency, is going to decline. The New York Fed president, Bill Dudley, of course, he came from Goldman Sachs, but he made an interesting comment last week after the China move, and he said that if market forces are going to determine where the Chinese currency trades, given the macroeconomic situation there, given our macroeconomic situation, then he said it would, and he used this double negative, I thought it was nice, he said it would not be inappropriate for the Chinese currency to decline. So I think far from a currency war, one, I'd say the currency movement so far has been about 3%. That is not a currency war. That I'd say that the RMB is not really weak. It's just less strong than it was. And that the Chinese are doing what the U.S., IMF, and other countries wanted to do, but they're not doing it because we want them to do it. They're doing it because they see it's in their own interest. The real game here, the real goal, is that China wants to be part of the SDR, the special drawing right, which is a basket of currencies. It composed of the dollar, the euro, the yen, and the British pound. And to be part of that club, that very exclusive club, is a sign of respect for China. It's a sign of recognition of the hard work that China has done to emerge from a very poor, small country to the world's second largest economy, and how it has opened up its capital markets to some extent, not fully, not as much as we want them to, not as much as they will ultimately do, but they have made some big strides. And I think that the Chinese, like the Russians, think that they've been disserviced. They haven't been given the respect that they deserve from the U.S., Western Europe, and Japan. And so I think the Chinese move is, so far, I'd say it's very small, inconsequential for Chinese exports, inconsequential for exporting deflation, but is an important signal, not the devaluation, but the new mechanism to determine the currency, letting market forces have a greater sway. And the last point I'd make about this is on a personal level, someone who says something and does the opposite, we'd say is being hypocritical. But when it comes to countries, we talk about policy being a declaratory policy, what they say, and operational policy, what they do. And the U.S. and the IMF say welcome to what China did, but tell them we want to see the implementation, the operational policy to match the declaratory policy. We want you to go ahead and do what you're saying you're going to do, and that partly could mean a weaker Chinese currency.
Now, do you think they're going to let them in? I mean, do you trust China? Look at what they did just several months ago in their stock market. I mean, they still just kind of wake up one day and say, okay, this is the way it's going to be, and set rules that we would not normally have in a free market economy. Isn't that going to hold them back from being accepted on a world stage?
Well, I'd say what China did, even in the stock market, you know, part of Japan's quantitative easing that they're doing right now includes buying stocks. During the 97-98 financial crisis, Hong Kong, which was not part of, well, it had just been given back to China.
Right.
That Hong Kong Monetary Authority, that's the equivalent of the central bank, they bought roughly 11% of the market's capitalization. And so I think that it's unusual for what China's doing, but a 30% slide in the stock market in 1 month is an unusual event. The IMF, and this I'm thinking about the managing director, Lagarde, she didn't really object so much to the Chinese buying their stocks. She said it would be a different issue, that is, to making the SDR decision. And there, making the decision on the SDR, it comes down to two major issues. One is exports. How important are their exports? And we know that China is the world's largest exporter. But the second one is the one that sort of trips them up, and that is freely useful, freely accessible currency. Not that it has to be freely convertible, but it has to be ease of access and of use. And there is where China has been lagging, and that's why I thought the IMS report that came out a week before China devalued its currency. The IMS report was an interim report before they make the formal decision. And the interim report said, China, you've done a lot of hard work. Congratulations, but you know what? Still need to do more work. And in particular, make the currency more flexible. And so I think that China said, okay, you tell us where what hoops we need to jump through. And if it makes sense to our country, we'll jump through those hoops. And China jumped through the hoops. And, this SDR decision is decided every 5 years. And so the compromise could be something like this. They say in October or November, fine, China, you'll be part of the SDR. But we're not going to implement it until a year from now, say next September. And that will give you time to implement more reforms to make the currency even easier to access. I go to China once a year, go to the airport, I want to buy some RMB, the Chinese currency, before I go there. They won't sell it. You can only get it onshore. They need to ease restrictions. This is just a simple retail type of example, but China has a lot of restrictions on the currency. They need to begin reducing those, and China just took a step in the right direction.
Interesting. So you think, I guess, that they'll eventually join the group. What about Russia? I mean, you mentioned that Russia felt like they're kind of in the Rodney Dangerfield Club. They don't get any respect. What about Russia?
I'd say fat chance. China's currency is much more useful, much more important in the world economy. Russia is really a shrinking economy, and it's primarily really only, I'd say, like a gas and energy station. I'd say that China is adopting some of the best practices at the IMF. It's trying to be a good citizen on the world stage. Russia is still not playing by the same rules. And so Russia, much smaller economy, much less important how important the ruble is relative to the Chinese currency. So I think unlikely to happen for Russia anytime soon.
Okay. Yeah, and I would agree with you. Mr. Putin is a whole different ballgame over there, and not exactly the friendliest guy to get along with. Mark, can you stay with us a little bit longer? I'd like to talk to you on the other side what the situation oil is going to mean for the world stage and for the United States. So stay with us if you don't mind.
Sure, let's talk.
Folks, we'll be back in just a moment. We've got Mark Chandler, Brown Brothers Harriman, having a great show. Stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've had Mark Chandler with us today from Brown Brothers Harriman. He is head of currency strategy and a man that pretty much knows everything. I've had a great time today. And thank you, Mark, for being with us. By the way, Mark, why don't you tell them how they can follow you? I understand that you have a blog.
Sure, I have a blog. The bank lets me experiment with this blog. It's called Mark to Market. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, makes my mom happy, TOMarket.com. And I post not only my commentary, but some of my colleagues who focus more on emerging markets. We post that commentary up there as well. It tends to be short, succinct pieces that are actionable, mostly for our institutional clients, but I think that many retail investors can also glean some insights from that.
Absolutely.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Mark Making Sense is my handle on Twitter. It really comes from the book I wrote back in 2009 where I anticipated this dollar rally called Making Sense of the Dollar.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you're one of those fortune tellers. Well, tell us what's going to happen now. So you said at the beginning of the show that you thought that there's a pretty good chance that interest rates are going to increase in September. What could cause that could cause that not to happen? I realize that there's no sure thing, but what do you think could be happening or the Fed could be looking at that might cause them to kick a can down the road? Because some of the people out there, like Gundlach and stuff like that, are very strong on the fact that they don't think the Fed can raise until sometime next year.
Yeah, so the things that could, I'd say the first thing that could really go wrong is if next next month we get a horrible, that is a very weak, jobs report. The Federal Reserve seems to be focused on jobs partly because of that Phillips curve idea. The better the labor market does, the more likely inflation is going to rise, they tell us. And so I think that a weak employment report, like what happened, I believe it was in February or March, a very weak employment report, and that sort of derailed the talk of the June hike. I'd say if the stock market, you know, some people are very bearish the stock market. I see us down here today. We're down almost 1% on the S&Ps. And if we fall, say, 10, 15%, if we just keep sliding, I think the that would disturb the Federal Reserve as well, the steepness of the slide and how fast it is. As far as international developments, I think the Fed tells us that decline in oil prices, while it would have an impact on inflation and inflation expectations, that the Fed looks through that and sees the impact of falling inflation to be a transitory event. You know, this is a big contrast to what the ECB, the European Central Bank, does. You know, back in 2008, between Bear Stearns going under and Lehman going under, oil prices got to about $160 a barrel. And what does the ECB do? They see, oh, higher oil prices, that's inflationary, we're going to raise interest rates, which ends up helping to drive the economy down quicker. The U.S. tends to view, the U.S. policymakers tend to view the decline in oil prices to be net positive, like a tax cut for U.S. consumers. The less money it takes to fill up the car with petrol, the more money you can take the family out to eat for the restaurant. The more black shoes my wife can buy.
Right.
And so that is so I think that we tend to view it as stimulative for the economy. Many other countries view it as a restraint.
Now, speaking of spending more money, and I guess maybe your wife would take some of her gasoline savings to buy, maybe she'll buy some red shoes or something, but the gas savings hasn't seemed to trickle down yet, but a lot of people are anticipating that what people are saving at the pump, which I think last estimate I saw was $175 per person, will trickle down and really cause our economy to get a boost. Do you agree with that?
I think it is already. I mean, that is the GDP component. So we look at consumption, which is about 70% of the U.S. economy, and consumption in the U.S. is coming in around 3% annualized rate per quarter for the last couple of quarters, somewhere around 3%. And that's important because unlike before the crisis, this 3% growth in consumption is solid in the sense that people are not using credit cards. American use of credit cards, revolving debt, is practically flat this year. So we're consuming. Why are we consuming? Because more people are working. Roughly another 200,000, 210,000 per month. So already, say, in August, we're talking about 1.6 million more Americans work. They may not be getting paid a lot more per hour. That's true. That's a problem. But 1.6 million people working, that's more income, that's more consumption. And so, in general, I'd say that the healthy thing about consumption is that it's being done without credit cards. And the other thing that's happening is the household's balance sheet is getting better. If we don't consume it, the savings from the drop in gasoline prices, we're boosting our savings.
Right, we're deleveraging.
Deleveraging, and this is a long-term process. But if we're healthier now as a country than we were, say, in 2008 or 2009.
So you seem to be pretty optimistic. So are you? You're not looking for? I assume you're not looking for a big crash in the market. Maybe some internal readjustment, like we've been seeing, but you're not looking for a big crash in the market and a kind of a modest, increase in interest rates. What do you think of the inflation picture? Are we okay there?
Well, you know, we just had the CPI number this morning. The headline was a little bit softer than expected, but the core rate, which the Fed focuses on, excludes food and energy. Of course, the Fed knows we all pay for food and energy, but they say that over time, and they've got data going back, say, I've seen the chart since 1960, that over time, headline inflation moves to core inflation, and so, rather than the other way around. And so what that means, really, then, I think, is that the Federal Reserve is, that we don't have a deflationary problem. Inflation is at a good area for the U.S., though it needs to rise a bit more on the core to get the Fed feel more comfortable. And there the key probably is going to be in wages. Two other things on the inflation front. One of the things holding it up is rents, shelter. That is, rents are, it's a tight rental market in many parts of the country. And the other thing that's happening is that despite the, you know, we talk about the drop in oil prices, but gasoline prices are a bit stickier. Partly you see this in the Midwest because the refinery had those problems. Gasoline, I know in Chicago, where my family is, paying a lot more than we have to pay here in New York. But in general, the core inflation is rising primarily because of the rental space.
Now, is there anything out there that worries you? Anything that keeps you up at night that that we might need to be aware of?
Well, I should tell you that I'm a Cubs fan.
Always, that shouldn't worry you. They consistently do the same thing every year.
Yeah. But I am concerned that two things really. One is that our expectations are still seem to be very elevated. Many people won't be happy here in the U.S. until we're growing 3% on a consistent basis, and I just don't know if we have that kind of structure anymore. I'm a kind of a lazy economist, and I think about growth as just being two variables. Your labor force growth, which is really a function of your population growth, and productivity. And both of those numbers are coming down. So that back before the crisis, say 2003, 2004, we'd say that the trend growth for the U.S. is close to 3%, maybe a little bit above. And now I think it's closer to maybe 2.25%. And so low growth.
Hey Mark. I should have asked you that question again. I'm running out of time. We'll have to bring you back. Thank you so much for being with us today. Folks, thanks for listening. Have a great day. Hope God blesses you and your family. God bless.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.